All right, we're ready to hear arguments in the first case, Spiedel and others versus the United States.
May it please the court, James Thorburn on behalf of the appellants. We would like to reserve several minutes for rebuttal when it comes time. The Supreme Court has noted many times that the burden of proof and standard of review are often determinative of the outcome of the case. Thus, it's imperative that the standard of review and burdens of proof this court uses are correct here. We're concerned that if the standards of review and burdens of proof are conflated, that we might lose our due process right to a hearing. This court, in both Standing Akimbo and High Desert Relief, confirmed that in summons proceedings, where there's a motion of foreign enforcement and affidavit submitted, summary judgment standards apply. Also noted, Powell Note 18 says that the rules of civil procedure apply, specifically complaint, answer, and hearing. But Powell never provided a burden of proof. So we're under summary judgment in this proceeding. What does that mean? In this circuit, it means that the moving party must prove their right to summary judgment beyond a reasonable doubt. Where the party bears the burden of proof, that means each and every element must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. In this particular case, what we have is that there were petitions of quash filed with motions for enforcement. Under Powell, the government is the one that bears the burden of proof, and it has to prove all the Powell standards. So while we are at summary judgment right now, it is not some slight burden. It is beyond a reasonable doubt as to all elements. They might wish to speak that, well, balanced financial management talks about slight burdens and heavy burdens. But first, balanced financial management was not a summary judgment case. Secondly, we really don't have slight burdens and heavy burdens as burdens of proof. Our burdens of proof are typically preponderance, clear and convincing, and beyond a reasonable doubt. What I believe that balanced financial management was speaking to when talking about slight burdens and heavy burdens is the practical matter of the difficulty of proof. For example, a non-summons proceeding. A person goes in and tries to enforce a promissory note. Clearly, the burden of proof is preponderance of the evidence.
Now, in this case, the court, you're saying, applied the wrong standard, treated it as a motion to dismiss and not a motion for summary judgment.
Yes, they treated it as a motion to dismiss. Well, we're not even sure completely what they did, but they did not treat it as summary judgment.
Does it matter? How does it matter?
How does it matter, first off, is how are the burdens of proof treated? Remember, summary judgment is not a substitute for trial.
My point is, when we look at what the district court did in this case, its ruling, did it not, even though under the label of a motion to dismiss, walk through the Powell factors?
It walked through the Powell factors, but under the wrong standards. These were, remember, under summary judgment, it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt of all the elements. All inferences are in favor of the non-moving party. So what it looks like happened in this case, and what we believe happened in Standing Akimbo too, when they were analyzing it, is that they conflated the standards, misused balanced financial management, and gave the inferences in favor of the government. And they gave the government a slight burden. Another, where I took it, is that they were saying all the government has to do is show a scintilla of evidence there, not proof beyond a reasonable doubt with all inferences against the government. That is the big problem that that we have here.
Counsel?
Yes.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt. I would like for you, if you would, to compare this affidavit in this case to the affidavit in Standing Akimbo, which was pretty much for all intents and purposes identical, as far as I can see. And in Akimbo, the panel held that applying the summary judgment standard, that very same affidavit was sufficient to meet the Powell factors, and in particular, the factor that you challenge here. How does this case differ?
Okay. First, as I go through, I'm going to go through the affidavit of David Huell, the one that's Appendix Volume 2, page 58. So we're on the same page. And looking at it from the standpoint, beyond a reasonable doubt, all inferences against the moving party. If you look at paragraph 13, to date, Green Solution entities have not provided enough information to substantiate the figures shown on their tax returns. That's conclusory. There is nothing, no facts underneath it substantiating that statement.
Counsel, I'm familiar with the affidavit and I have it here. And my question to you was, it's the same affidavit for all intents and purposes. It's identical to the one in Standing Akimbo that we approved applying the Powell factors and the summary judgment standard. So can you distinguish it for me in light of Akimbo?
Again, it is looking
We do have to apply Akimbo. We don't have a choice about that.
Well, you have to apply summary judgment. Correct.
And I'm asking what's distinct about this case.
Okay, first off, in this, it talks about the records from the State of Colorado Marijuana Enforcement Division. It does not talk about any of the reports at all. It just says that MED information would be helpful to us. It's just a conclusion.
Counsel, we addressed that factor as well. That's another argument that you make. And we addressed that issue as well in Akimbo and said it doesn't have to identify the reports. And if the reports are not available or don't exist, they're not produced. So we resolved that in also.
My reading of Standing Akimbo as far as whether the documents exist, I don't think that Judge Phillips actually ruled.
Well, I was on the panel as well, and it's the court.
The court. Thank you. I was being specific.
It's a published opinion. It's a published opinion.
Yes,
so
it is.
Presidential from this court.
I understand.
From last year.
And the court did not specifically state that the burden to prove the non-existence of the documents is on the taxpayer. The court said that the taxpayer is challenging whether the documents exist. The next sentence is, but the taxpayers have to prove their affirmative defenses. They never made the link, the court never made the link that the existence of the documents is an affirmative defense. And I should note that if this court is going to construe Standing Akimbo as saying there's a holding that the existence of the documents is an affirmative defense rather than an element of the burden of the government, we're creating a split in the circuits here.
If you want to go down the road of summary judgment, could you help us with identifying an issue of material fact that is in dispute?
One of the material facts that's in dispute is whether or not the documents that are being requested are in existence. That is a big L because we are certain that they are not. And I think if we were allowed to go to hearing and if we were able to subpoena a state of Colorado official, that they would confirm that these documents were not in existence on the date of the summons. If you notice on Mr. Huell's summonses, He talks about annual inventory report, a copy of annual inventory report showing annual totals of product purchase grown, process sold, and waste destroyed from the metric database for periods listed above. This does not sound all inferences in favor of the non-moving party. This does not sound like a pre-existing report.
Well, back to that, I guess on that same point, is it an issue of disputed issue of material fact if one party asks for a report and the other party says we don't have such a report?
Could you repeat the question? I don't think I understood.
Just asking for a report doesn't mean that such a thing exists. So isn't the simple answer, I'm sorry, we don't have such a report?
Okay. The United States v. Rue, United States v. Greenfield, as we put in there, says that this burden is on the government to demonstrate the existence. Also, under the statute.
When you ask for something, you have to prove that such a thing exists before you can ask for it.
Yes, and also
the broad sweep of a tax summons, is that the law as you usually read it or see it applied?
That's what I understand. And in fact, under IRC 7603A, it says that the government has to identify the dock with reasonable certainty.
Right.
So it's not only court, it's statutory. And with that, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Let me ask you a question for a moment before you reserve. And that goes just along the lines of what we're talking about. So to get a document, you have to describe it with reasonable certainty. I have no problem with that proposition. But, I mean, there's no way for the government to know if the state has these reports without asking for it. I mean, are they supposed to do some type of informal investigation to make sure they exist before they send a summons?
Well, if we look at U.S. v. Greenwood, they go through those issues there. It starts turning into a fishing expedition. If you say, well, I want to get all the information that you may have on this taxpayer, there's no particularity at that point. This starts getting into the Fourth Amendment issues. This is Paxton's case you have to describe what you are summonsing. The fact that they don't know that it exists, is that a legitimate purpose to ask for something that nobody knows exists? And again, it has to be described with reasonable certainty. A bank statement, there's reasonable certainty that a bank statement exists if they know that the person is banking at that place. And that's one of the things that the agents always put in their affidavits. They bank there. They're going to have bank statements. We want the bank statements. There's reasonable certainty. What we have here is we don't know what these reports are, and it's just a guess whether they exist. With that, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Nathaniel Pollack representing the United States in this appeal. Our position, Your Honors, is that these cases are essentially carbon copies of the Standing Akimbo case, and the arguments made here are the very same arguments that were made in the Standing Akimbo case. And this court, in a very thorough and careful opinion in which it described in detail each of the arguments, in the best light and dealt with them and rejected them, the Standing Akimbo is for that reason dispositive on all the merits issues except for the one jurisdictional issue, which we believe is a straightforward issue. The summary judgment point is one that I would like to address briefly. And the key thing I think to understand is that this court has now repeatedly in Balanced Financial Management, in High Desert Relief, and in Standing Akimbo, outlined what I would describe as six key principles that govern the district court's determination of motions to quash IRS summonses. And those six key principles are Number one, that the proceedings are to be summary in nature, and that means the only thing at issue is whether the summons is issued in good faith. Number two, that the burden on the government to establish the Powell factors is slight. Number three, specifically, that the government meets that burden as a general matter through an affidavit of the IRS agent who issued the summons. Number four, that the taxpayers have a heavy burden. They must either factually refute the Powell showing, factually support affirmative defenses, and that conclusory allegations are not going to meet the burden. Number five, that an evidentiary hearing is granted only if this heavy burden is met, and otherwise, that is, in the normal case, the district court should dispose of the proceedings on the papers before it. And finally, number six, discovery is available only in extraordinary situations and would require a substantial preliminary showing by the taxpayer. That's what this court has said in those three cases. A lot of that is repeating what the Supreme Court said in U.S. versus Clark, U.S. versus Stewart. And it also is consistent with what other courts of appeals have said. In every circuit, those six principles are the principles that govern. And so saying that the summary judgment standard applies doesn't clearly in standing akimbo and can't mean that those six principles are eroded or undone.
Does Clark overrule the balanced financial case?
Absolutely not. In fact, in Clark, the court noted without any hint of censure, I mean, that the issue was the focus of Clark was not here, but the Clark noted that, yes, the government normally uses a affidavit of the IRS agent issuing the summons to meet the Powell burden. And in fact, Clark overturned the 11th Circuit's determination that a mere allegation of improper motive by the government was sufficient to get to an evidentiary hearing. So I think Clark is fully consistent with balanced financial management. And I would note that I think it's important. I understand that standing akimbo governs here and is binding authority, and we think standing akimbo is a great opinion. But I do think it's important that when we talk about the summary judgment standard, we talk about it in a way that makes clear that, because obviously we can see that the hook that now the taxpayers want to rely on is, well, the summary judgment standard applies. And so that means something different about, you know, how these six principles play out. And that can't be right. I think standing akimbo is already clear on that, but I think...
If the difference between a motion to dismiss and a motion for summary judgment are great as far as what the parties have to show before the district court. I mean, I don't think we can just glide over that and say, gosh, it just doesn't matter. We have cases that say it does matter. We've reversed cases where the court has used the wrong approach.
That's certainly true as a general matter. The only thing I would say is, if you look at the other cases in other circuits, for example, where these same six guiding principles are set out about how you deal with these summons proceedings, I think you will commonly see that the court oftentimes just doesn't even address the question of whether it should be motion to dismiss or whether it should be motion for summary judgment. Because in this context, frankly, the summary judgment procedure is somewhat of an empty vessel, simply because, as standing akimbo recognized, the substantive law framework that governs is determinative. And here, the substantive law framework largely determines, maybe even entirely determines, the procedural rules that apply.
If the court walks through the Powell factors, in your view, that's enough, and we don't have to look at how the court, what burdens the court placed on each party as it walked through those factors.
I think that the burdens are determined by this court's case law on these summons enforcement proceedings. That is, that the burden on the government to show the Powell factors is slight and may be met by the kind of affidavit that was made here, and as Judge Moritz pointed out, that is substantially similar to the affidavit that was made in the Standing Akimbo case. And so those are the burdens that apply in this context. And so, yes, I think it's true, as I think this Standing Akimbo case sort of illustrates, that in this context, it's mainly nomenclature, that the question of whether the court converts the motion to dismiss. And to be clear, the government will not file motions to dismiss within this circuit going forward. We get the message from Standing Akimbo, but the question of whether the court converts the motion to dismiss to a motion to summary judgment is sort of a formality, because the essence of the court's determination is going to be, let's look at the affidavit and let's go through the Powell factors and see if they're met. Let's look at the allegations that are made by the taxpayer and see if they actually amount to a factual dispute of these factors, or if the taxpayer has factually made affirmative defenses.
Counsel, I understand what you're saying, and I recall this same discussion from the Akimbo case about the nomenclature versus what we actually do in reviewing the Powell factors. Do you, and I understand what you're saying, I sense that you disagree with some aspects of Akimbo, but do you think that we actually applied the statutory, or not statutory, but the substantive framework that you were just discussing and the various steps, do you think that we applied that correctly in Akimbo?
Absolutely. And to be clear, I don't think that we disagree with Standing Akimbo. I just offer that I wouldn't want lower courts to be confused going forward. And I will say, just for the court's information, we've obviously at the Justice Department discussed sort of how to deal with these motions, which are fairly routine in the lower courts. And what we are doing, particularly in this circuit, but I think more generally, is to title our motion simply a motion to summarily deny the petition and to enforce the summons. In other words, we think that the framework that Powell sets out is sufficient, and the question of motion to dismiss or summary judgment is really maybe a distraction and a potentially confusing one. And I would just, for the court's information, and again, I'm not trying, the Standing Akimbo is binding, and we're very happy with Standing Akimbo. But if the court wanted to look at one other case that's on point, it's the Sugarloaf Funding case out of the First Circuit. That's 584 F3rd 340. And in that case,
is that cited in your brief?
I believe so, yes. Okay. Yeah, it is. I know so. In that case, the court actually said, as long as especially if the government is making a motion to enforce, which to be clear is a statutory right that the government has in the context of these kinds of petitions to quash, then it doesn't actually need to make to move to dismiss. And I think by extension, the same would be true with respect to a motion for summary judgment. So I just offer that as a frame of reference. But to be clear, I think that Standing Akimbo does a perfect job of reviewing the substance of what the district court did, which is substantially similar to the substance of what the district court did in these consolidated cases.
So in this case, when you use the verbiage of dismiss, that's surplusage. We're not supposed to take you at your word in your pleading?
Well, no. I mean, our practice up until until Standing Akimbo, I don't think it was clear in this circuit, respectfully, that it was improper to use a motion to dismiss. High Desert dealt with a case where the government and frankly...
Well, it's not a novel concept when you're relying on a document that's outside of a complaint or a summons, that the case is automatically a summary judgment case because the court is looking beyond something than the bare pleadings.
I understand that, Your Honor. I think the way we thought about it prior to standing akimbo is this is kind of like a case where a document is issued, like a petitioner comes forward in their complaint and refers to a deed. The defendant can then, you know, talk about the deed or you know, file with the court a copy of the deed in his answer to the motion to dismiss, and that doesn't convert it to a summary judgment motion. I understand that standing akimbo stands for the proposition that courts should convert motions to dismiss for in this circumstance to summary judgment motions, and going forward, we're making efforts to try to account for that holding, and we certainly won't file our motions as motion to dismiss going forward. But I just that was the thinking prior to this court's clarification of that point in the standing akimbo opinion. But I think the standing, as a matter of substance, the standing akimbo opinion does exactly the kind of review of the district court's determinations and marches through here exactly the same arguments. And I would just note parenthetically, I mean, I think back in the summer of 2019, in the standing akimbo case, Mr. Thornburn made a motion to stay the proceedings asking this court to eventually consolidate standing akimbo with these five cases, and the court denied it, which I think, but you know, based on the fact that, well, the court didn't talk about why it denied it. My supposition is that it denied it based on the fact that standing akimbo had already been largely briefed. And so the efficiency gains weren't really it didn't make sense to consolidate. But this case is essentially the very same case. If the court doesn't have any further questions, we're happy to rest on the briefs, and we would respectfully request this court to affirm.
Thank you. I hope opposing counsel is out there somewhere.
Yeah, there he is. I am here.
Come back.
I'm back. Powell made emphatically clear the taxpayer has a right to a hearing. What this proceeding is doing, summary judgment by its nature, discusses whether the right to hearing is taken away because there are no facts in dispute and the moving party is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. Our right to hearing is a due process right. So this is what we're talking about. Are we taking away the due process right to hearing because there's no facts in dispute and the moving party is entitled to judgment as a matter of law?
So, counsel, you say that no facts are in dispute. What's the universe of facts? The government's affidavits?
The universe of facts is the government's affidavits. We have counter affidavits that have been supplied to the court in all cases. There are a lot of documents that are state website pages that were presented to the court. State website pages are usually considered competent evidence. Nothing in that has been submitted would be considered inadmissible hearsay. Should say that there has been no objections on hearsay grounds to anything that's been submitted. There is a whole host of evidence that needs to be considered to decide whether or not there are no facts in dispute. They mentioned the deed. Counsel mentioned that a deed comes in, but a deed is not testimony there. The affidavit is testimony, and without the ability to cross-examine. And without any other questions, looks like my time has ended. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted.